and the sea.
This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
And welcome, boys and girls. How are you today? It is, well, for you, anyway, it's Sunday, July 22nd. And I'm here in the studio with Charlottesville Police Chief Timothy Longo. Chief, how are you?
Fine, Rick. How are you? Thanks for having me back. It's been a while.
It has been a while. Have you been busy or something? You got stuff going on?
I think you've been ignoring me. I must not be newsworthy anymore. That's a good thing.
You know, I don't know. I did a search, you know, typed your name in and Googled it. And then I... on the Google, and I also did so on the Daily Progress as a search for their backstories. You're newsworthy. Your name came up a lot.
I used to think it was marketing. Now I'm not so sure.
Marketing. Yes, I don't know how many police chiefs would qualify as marketing to the general public. But nonetheless, it is good to see you again in this particular manner. Do you pull people over, by the way?
Yeah, every once in a while I do. I really do enjoy policing still, the job of actually getting out on the street and being part of what we do. And from time to time I have to initiate a traffic stop. The good news is they don't issue me a uniform traffic citation book, so if it comes down to having to write a ticket, we need to call in someone else who's able to do that. But I do initiate car stops when the opportunity requires me to do
requires,
so.
Requires, not necessarily because you've got the excitement for the day.
No, I don't go looking for trouble.
Good enough. But it is nice to have you back. I appreciate you making time.
Happy
because,
to be
boys and girls, today's show is not live. I'm out having a social life for a change. While we drum up a substitute, the occasional substitute, you know, I have to go to Las Vegas every March, and the occasional family life when mom and dad would like me to come home. So we're in here, we're recording this. Phone lines will not be open today. I get to ask Chief Longo all the questions, but don't turn off your dial. Keep listening because there's a lot of interesting stuff upcoming throughout the hour. In the paper recently, in the Daily Progress, new style of recruitment for the Charlottesville Police Department, security cameras on the downtown mall. That's been in every form of print in our area. Speeding fines, et cetera. Lots of stuff here. But Chief, let me start from the beginning.
Okay.
Of your entry into the community. You came from the Baltimore area, right?
I did. I was born and raised in Baltimore City. Thought I'd die in Baltimore City, quite frankly.
And, you know, not that
I'm
happy that you're not nearing that stage, but why leave Baltimore?
Well, when I retired from the Baltimore Police Department, I took about 9 months and was consulting in the Metropolitan Police Department in Washington, D.C., and I got a call from a friend who was in policing and knew I'd been looking for an opportunity to lead a department of my own, and brought Charlottesville to my attention, and I applied and participated in the process and was hired. And, you know, frankly, when I took on the responsibility, I wasn't sure that I'd be entirely comfortable in a small police department, having come from an organization of 3,200. But I haven't looked back very often and not presently looking back, and really feel this is a comfortable fit for me and my family.
3,200?
3,200.
Versus what are we talking about now?
I'm authorized 117 sworn.
That's a difference.
It's a huge difference. The first command I had in Baltimore was well over 200 people. The bureau, I'm a retired bureau chief in Baltimore, and the bureau that I commanded was several hundred. So it was a nice thing to come to an organization where when I walk out the door of my office and look in any direction, I know the first name of the person I'm looking at, probably know something about their family, know their spouse's name, maybe their kids, and it's a comfortable fit to work in an organization where people know each other that well, and you have the opportunity to build relationships that way.
I'm curious, you know, I ask this sort of emphasizing question about the difference in size between Baltimore and Charlottesville. Have you found any? How long have you been with Charlottesville now?
Be 7 years in February.
7 years. Have you found anything that is similar between the two departments, between the two cities?
Well,
the jobs.
Yeah, Charlottesville is, although we're a little over 10 square miles, 40,000 some people, I suspect, it's a city nonetheless. So it brings with it some of the same challenges that we see in larger cities in America. The drug markets that exist practically everywhere in our country today presents challenges for law enforcement. The emergence of criminal street gangs that have taken some of those markets over and present unique challenges for cities and police departments. The concerns about growing methamphetamine markets, particularly, see a lot of that in big cities. We certainly see some of it over in the valley, and my concern is we'll see some of it here in the years to come. So from a policing strategy perspective, the same strategies that can be employed in large agencies can be adapted to smaller organizations and communities as well. The only difference is that when I look at a strategy that we may have employed in Baltimore, I got to really ask myself whether I have the operational capacity to really implement that strategy in a way that will be effective and meaningful. But as far as the challenges that are presented, they're very much the same in many cities, large and small, across the country.
All right, well, let's talk first about the article that has been in the paper the most, and that's the security cameras on the downtown mall. Now, when we're recording this program today, just last night?
Monday night.
I have no idea what today
is. Monday night.
I just know it's not Sunday.
It's Wednesday.
All right. So Monday night, Charlottesville City Council approved the right or whatever, the opportunity for things to be bid on security cameras for the downtown mall. And there's been sort of a back and forth. You and the police department, you're all for it. You think it would help in a number of ways?
Yeah. It's probably helpful to give a little background so that people don't think we kind of came up with a strategy in a vacuum over the last several months or weeks. And we first assessed the downtown area, and particularly the gateway into our public buildings or critical infrastructure. Just after 9/11, we looked at our city buildings, what we would constitute our critical infrastructure. That is the stuff that if it broke down for some reason or became the subject of a critical event, it could shut down city operations and affect a customer service delivery. So when we looked at those buildings, we looked at the downtown mall because it's a gateway to those buildings to see if, in fact, we could leverage technology to help with safety and security. At that time, we were looking at doing a system that was fiber-based. Well, there's no fiber that runs down the mall, so we'd have to go off the side streets, Water and Market, and found it to be pretty cost prohibitive. So we put that on a shelf. We continued to assess other aspects of security, but video cameras seemed to be cost prohibitive at the time. We revisited that assessment when the development on the east end of the mall began to pick up.
You're talking about the pavilion and
the transit
bus center.
And it logically would bring more people to that end of the mall, again, where our critical infrastructure is. So we looked at it, and there didn't seem to be a lot of interest in video cameras at that time. That was probably 2 years ago. Incident to Virginia Tech, I directed our crime prevention specialist to go into the public buildings again and do a vulnerability assessment, and at that time said, let's look at the camera issue again and see how, from a cost standpoint, whether it's something we can even explore. So that's how the issue got generated in the most recent aspect of history. It just so happened around that same time, or actually in the immediate aftermath of what we saw happen in Tech, we saw some incidents begin to occur around the downtown mall that involved assaults of individuals walking to and from cars, unprovoked for the most part. So people became very concerned about safety on the downtown mall. So when this issue got out there, I began hearing a lot of feedback from both residents who live in the downtown area, but also business owners about what are some of the ways we can improve safety and security, both from a resource standpoint, and what other issues or things can we leverage. Technology, of course, is one of them. So that's how it got in front of council. And you're correct that they've given me authorization, gave the city manager authorization, who in turn gave me authorization to go ahead and develop an RFP and a scope of work and see really what this would cost from a dollar and cent standpoint, and then go from there and developing a policy as how it would be implemented and specifically where we would install these cameras.
We are talking with Charlottesville Police Chief Timothy Longo here in the studio today. Sorry, phone lines are not open. Chief and I are out having a good Sunday, so we're doing this on an earlier day of the week. You're stuck with my questions. Chief, you talk about how a variety of things sort of led to checking out the security camera issue, right. 9/11, cost prohibitive, some of the issues, some of the assaults that have been going on around the downtown area in the past months.
Yeah, and I think probably beginning around sometime in March, and I really think from a community-wide perspective, that's what really started generating a lot of discussion around this. Even though we'd been talking about it for some time, citizens, business owners were saying, look, you know, we've invested a lot of money downtown, a lot of very important assets that contribute to our tax base, and if we create an atmosphere and environment where people don't feel safe here, we're going to have a problem. So let's leverage as many resources as we can to prevent that from happening and give rise to a greater sense of safety and security. And so the issues like let's throw more cops at the problem, which that's a great issue, but it takes a long time to stand up a contingent of resources, human resources, to deal with issues like that. So is there technology or other things out there that would help us at least from a prevention and then an investigative standpoint? And that's where I think the cameras become a topic of discussion.
Well, one of the issues that I've read is that the assaults haven't been on the mall, or they've been off the mall. Is that correct?
Yeah, not that there haven't been incidents in the past that have occurred on the access points to the mall, the side streets as we call them, but these particular assaults, about six of them, we're looking at eight totally that have occurred probably since March. Six of them are really around the mall itself. And they've occurred on Garrett Street. We've had one on the Belmont Bridge. We had one on Market Street, close by the SNL building down there.
So how do the cameras play into that? I mean, if you have eight incidents that we're talking about, mm-hmm. and six of them, I guess would not be videotaped or filmed in whatever manner, whatever more modern than a VHS recorder,
right?
How do the cameras help reduce that?
Well, obviously strategy and where you place those cameras are really important. This initial assessment included probably 30 cameras in 30 different locations. 10 of those locations were in the area just south of the mall that encompasses the Water Street parking garage, for example. The metered lot down there, the pay lot that folks park at from time to time, the business venues along 2nd Street there, the X Lounge, for example, those corridors that feed into the downtown mall would be sufficiently covered by those 10 cameras. So it's likely, for example, that an incident that occurred on Water Street or an incident that occurred on Garrett Street or an incident that occurred on 2nd Street, depending on where those cameras would place, could depict those images. 15 of the cameras would be placed on the actual bricks itself at some location. Not only would it cover what's taking place on the bricks, but it would also capture events on those side streets. As I said before, we did have an incident that occurred involving a couple coming out of a restaurant one night several months ago. Whether or not these systems would have picked up those individual incidents, it's hard for me to say. But if they were in place, it's possible that they could. And if they're monitored in real time, which others have suggested and I support that, boy, if we can do this, it could really not only help us immediately respond to an event as it's happening, give us better information about suspect descriptions, the presence of a weapon, escape routes, information that's really important to a police officer to not only get there and assist a victim, but also to allow responding units to develop a perimeter and really know what they're looking for. The other five cameras that were part of the assessment, the initial assessment as well, we'll really be focused on the public buildings, City Hall, the Annex, and we'll also cover areas around Market Street where and the Belmont Bridge where incidents have occurred as well. So it's possible that even though we talk about this as cameras on the mall, these cameras will have a much broader scope of area depending on where they're affixed and from what vantage points those cameras would be shooting. They wouldn't be fixed cameras. They'll have pan capability, so they could be moving from one location to the other at any given time.
So when people say cameras on the mall, you're talking about on the downtown mall area.
That's correct. Not just
like from the Omni to the Pavilion down the corridor.
That's correct.
All right. I think a lot of people, including myself, have a different vision based on what I'm reading in the newspaper or hearing discussed rather than what you're actually talking about.
Yeah, and part of that is that, you know, it takes a lot of time, energy, and human resources in these assessments when you start talking about, okay, exactly where are we going to fix this piece of equipment? And from where are we going to draw power? And do we need to get an agreement with a particular property owner in which to work with us to do what we need to accomplish? So we want to make sure we have the authorization before we do a lot of that more specific work with respect to the exact locations. But from a general standpoint, I think it's safe to say that we're going to be covering the areas from the Water Street corridor clear over to Market Street and from the Omni clear down to the Pavilion in that area that gets a tremendous amount of pedestrian foot traffic on any given day.
You're listening to WNRN and the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call here on July 22nd. Charlottesville Police Chief Timothy Longo joining us in the studio. Phone lines are not open today. We're out having a good time. We have recorded this earlier. Chief, several people, I should rephrase that, several articles that have read have said that, yeah, while the security cameras have helped in some cities, it hasn't really helped in others. And so is the expense worth it?
I think it is, but I agree that it's more difficult to capture the success of such equipment from a prevention standpoint, even though I happen to believe it has a preventative quality, again, particularly if it's monitored in real time and you widely inform your community that the area is being surveilled. I think it does kind of plant that notion in someone's mind who may be going into an area for the purpose of committing a criminal act, that it's possible that their image could be captured and there could be some type of intervention that would result in their arrest. But it is harder to kind of assess that from a prevention standpoint. Where I think it's easier to assess is how such equipment can be used in the retrospective investigation of crime.
Talk about that for a minute, because my understanding is that and I want to say videotape, but it's not, right? It's going to be more like a digital disc, I'm assuming, to get the best photo and the best.
Absolutely. The full digital wireless, what we're going to put into the RFP is some of the best.
What's RFP?
A request for proposal. We put it out in a competitive bid to see what companies and what equipment's out there that can respond to specific or specifications that are unique to what it is we're looking to get from the equipment that we purchase.
But the images, it's not like you're going to have somebody in the 911 emergency, you know, room watching these images as they take place, right? It's not like a security room in a big building.
Well, that's correct. That's not the plan initially, but I want to create an opening for an opportunity that at some point in time, if we can fund it, to have people monitoring these systems in real time, they don't necessarily have to be sworn police officers, but they have to have immediate access to contacting the police in the event they're looking at an image that is a crime in progress, or they're looking at an image which looks like could be a potential for a crime in progress, so they can alert us in a timely fashion and we can intervene before something occurs. But as I said before, I think it's easier to really speak to the success of these systems when you consider the impact they've had on the retrospective investigation of crime. And we've had incidents that I think our Commonwealth attorney would probably agree with me that video images have been very helpful in successful prosecutions, particularly where that video is clear and crisp enough to identify people who are involved in a criminal incident.
All right, you're here on the Wake Up Call with Charlottesville Police Chief Timothy Longo.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let's take a moment and thank Blue Ridge Graphics for their support. You can find them at the corner of Meade Avenue and East High Street here in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, and at brgtshirts.com. Plus, we want to thank loyal listeners like Roy Huta, Kathy Hinchy, and Sarah Landon for contributing to WNRN's fund drive this past spring. It's because of people like them that you have the Wake Up Call on air every Sunday. It's also because of our program underwriters, like the ones you're hearing from this hour, as well as Mona Lisa Pasta and Splendora. So stay tuned and tell a friend about the Wake Up Call and every other bit of programming here you enjoy on WNRN. And be sure to support us in the upcoming fall fund drive. All right, back in action with Chief Longo. We're talking about a variety of things. Right now we're talking about the proposal for security cameras on the Charlottesville downtown mall. We'll get to some other topics before the hour is up. Phone lines are not open. Sorry about that today, boys and girls. We're doing this specifically because my voice sounds at its league best as I cough and whimper and do whatever through the hour. Hang on one second. Hopefully that helped. Nope, didn't, did it, Chief? Didn't help at all.
He sounds great.
That's what all the women in my life say. all right, so back to the security cameras. Question. I'm too drunk to drive, but I get in my car when I leave that downtown mall restaurant anyway. Are you going to look at the video image and, you know, do something about it a week later?
No, I don't know that that's really the purpose of what we're trying to accomplish.
But that's a concern, isn't it?
Sure,
it's a concern of others.
Yeah, you know, another concern is, you know, hey, honey, I'm working late tonight and I'm not coming home. And gee, there you are walking into the blue light. If somebody sees that and they know me, and they're going to call. Well, that's not what they're there for. If I get a call. Or we get a call of an incident that occurred, a robbery, an assault, a burglary, God forbid something worse that occurs in an area that we know is covered by these camera systems, we're going to go to the images and we're going to try to find evidence of that crime. You know, if somebody calls and says, hey, there was a guy, big guy in a blue shirt with glasses who staggered out of my bar and stumbled into a vehicle and pulled away last night about 1 o'clock in the morning, theoretically, we could go and capture that image, but the reality of is are we going to be able to use that image alone in which to have a successful prosecution for DUI? I think probably not. So that's not necessarily the kinds of things that we're going to be looking for this system to help us, particularly when it comes to the retrospective investigation of criminal activity. And we're very concerned with violent crime and the use of such a system in successfully prosecuting people involved in those kinds of incidents.
I guess that one of the things that's happened as we continue to talk about the security cameras, and we are going to get to other things, it's just that this one has been
a hot topic.
This is the hot topic. This is the current event.
Yeah.
And I think that one of the issues that has been put up front is what we're talking about. They're not going to happen. They're not going to be used in that manner. These images will not be used for that. They're not going to be viewed immediately. They're going to be reviewed later, unless, you know, and maybe not for a week, but maybe the next morning based on what's happened. do you think that that's going to stop some of the assaults if they know that, because the assaults and I'm sure you can tell us that the vast majority of that sort of behavior happens without forethought. Correct?
My understanding, with my
sociology background, all about crime and juvenile delinquency, is that You know, that sort of behavior, you don't leave the house thinking that that's going to happen. You have too much to drink and you get in a fight on the mall. Or, okay, you're walking down the mall and your group of young teens that are apparently committing some of these crimes that we've been talking about. But when the opportunity arises, you just do it.
I don't think these events are quite like that. I think the people that are responsible for these types of activities do go out with a notion that they could find themselves in that kind of situation during the course of a given night.
Are they just going to move to the corner? Because the corner doesn't.
You know, I suspect they could move anywhere in the city, and that issue's come up in discussions with people, and in fact, interviews like this is, you know, Chief. If we look at the crime statistics on the downtown mall and then we look at the crime statistics in another neighborhood, it may be that crime's not necessarily the highest there. So why invest this kind of money and energy? Well, I think systems like this are most effective in areas to get a lot of heavy traffic. In this case, the downtown mall gets a tremendous amount of pedestrian foot traffic. Much like a kiosk, I think systems like this are the most productive and the most effective in areas like that. However, you know, we can put this system anywhere in the city. I mean, you tell me where you want it. You tell me where you think as a resident it would be most effective. We're willing to consider that. But I think we got to start here because we got a tremendous investment in this area. There's a tremendous concern for personal safety in this area. And the fact of the matter is tens of thousands of people are down there every single day. It draws a tremendous number of people. And I think if we're going to start somewhere, and again, it's the gateway to some of our critical infrastructure. So if we're going to start someplace, this is probably a good place to start, but may not be the last place that we ought to discuss putting in place this kind of technology, which I think helps us.
All right. It's about 27 after the hour. Thanks for listening. Charlottesville Police Chief Timothy Longo joining me in the studio. Phone lines are not open. Sorry about that, because I know that this would be a good one for the phone lines. But, hey, I had to have a show that I could pre-record where I could fill the hour with my own questions. All right, Chief, last basic question from me on the security camera issue.
Okay.
Council members said that they'll let you put the bid out, the RFP,
request for proposal.
RFP, but they also said that they will continue to discuss the policies for the use of the cameras. I'm curious what you think that means. Is that some of the stuff we've been talked about?
Yeah, I think I know what it means. One of the things they asked me for was, in addition to coming back with the responses from the RFPs, is also a policy as to how the system would be deployed and how the system would be utilized. And some things such as under what circumstances would the images be reviewed? Under what circumstances would the images be used? The easy answer is for a legitimate law enforcement purpose. And then also, how long would you retain the images?
Would you keep them for
10 days, 30 days, 90 days, 60 days?
I like that.
And one of the benchmarks we can look to is our 911 center and ask, how long do you keep the 911 tapes and the dispatch tapes? We typically keep them for a period of time that it could be as few as 30 days or as many as 90 days, but a reasonable period of time so that if an incident comes to your attention within a given time frame, you have the ability to be able to go back and research, in this case, an image, in their instance, a call to the system or the dispatch of a call. So there are some benchmarks we can look to give some consideration to the development of that policy. But my plan is, when I go back to them with the dollars and cents figures, that I also give them a model policy. We're also reaching out to other cities that have deployed systems like this to see what kind of policies they have in place. I think that's what they're referring to.
Expected time frame?
You know, I really can't give you one. We're going to probably begin working on the RFP within the next 2 weeks. I don't know how long that'll take. That's kind of an issue between my tech person or IT department and purchasing. And once that's developed, we'll probably let the RFP for a period of time, maybe 30 days, get responses back, look at those responses over several weeks, identify some vendors for some interviews and demonstrations. And so it could be several months before a system is chosen or we go back to council with, here's what we would like to deploy. And, oh, by the way, here's the policy you asked for. And then go from there. And I'm hopeful that we'll get the level of support from the community, particularly when they understand that we're going to use the system responsibly and in a way that's for law enforcement purposes only. I think people, they do get a little uncomfortable when they think it's the government implementing a system like this. You know, the reality of it is, Rick, that we have cameras throughout the city on the grounds of the University of Virginia in our Charlottesville School Division, in every banking institution in the city, in many office buildings and elevators that you go into, in front of every ATM machine. There are small businesses on the downtown mall that have video systems. You may recall one of the small shops on the mall the morning that there was a bank robbery that took place in the mall, captured the individual buying a cup of coffee just moments before he went into the bank. So we know that it's out there, but folks still get a little concerned and uncomfortable when it's government who's monitoring a system like this, because there's some suspicion as to what would happen to the images. And we'll try to respond to those suspicions and questions over the next several months so that we get a level of support from the community that I think would make this system most productive for us.
All right. We'll move on past the security camera topic and into some others. But let me take a moment. Five Guys Burgers and Fries needs a big high five from us. Five Guys serves America's standard, fresh and handmade from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m., and they're open until 10 Fridays and Saturdays. That's Five Guys Burgers and Fries behind the fountain in the Berkshire Shopping Center, in the Hollymead Town Center, and now on the downtown mall, all here in Charlottesville. On the web, it's fiveguys.com. That's F-I-V-E-guys.com. Yeah, that's my sexy voice you're hearing. Rick Moore here on the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. Charlottesville Police Chief Timothy Longo in the studio with me. A few days before the actual Sunday, July 22nd, that you're listening to us, so phone lines are not open. Chief has made a very kind gesture to come in and help me out tonight. All right. Chief, there was an article in the paper just within the past week. I want to say... to you and me, it was just like Saturday, so I guess about a week ago to those who were listening.
Right.
From the Daily Progress, new style of officer recruitment. I'm curious if you can, for those who didn't read the article, didn't explain it, what I understood was, instead of focusing on new guys out of the academy, you're going to go hunting for guys who have a couple years' experience in other cities and try and get them to come over.
Yeah, it really isn't new. We began the program back in 2005.
Are you saying that the progress is behind the times?
Imagine that.
On keeping up with the current events?
I don't know how that happened.
Well,
no,
you know.
In their defense, we've had it for a little bit of time now, and we've only had one officer take advantage of the program, and, you know, we're in such dire straits with respect to not just in Charlottesville, but law enforcement across the country is experiencing a tremendous number of vacancies. We have in Charlottesville seven or eight actual vacancies, which means there's a job number with nobody in it. And we have another eight people in training. So really, when you add those two numbers together, 16 operational vacancies. And we're pulling out all the stops. We're looking at every legitimate recruitment tool that we have and putting it out there as public as we can, in hopes that there may be some departments around our community, certified police officers, that haven't heard of our incentive program, and we were hopeful that the media coverage would get that out there a bit and generate a little bit more interest in our community and our police department. But it's not really new.
I'm curious as to I guess the difference, the benefits of the trained officer versus the new recruit seems obvious, except I do have a question as to whether or not the guy with experience shows up in Charlottesville and he has some habits that you wish he didn't have that he got from his previous employer, as opposed to the new guy who comes in and you're like, this is how we do it.
Right. Well, step one is he gets a discussion to that effect. I meet with every officer when they're presented with their badge and their credentials, whether they're a new hire and they're getting ready to go off to the police academy, or they're a new hire and they're certified and they worked 5 years before in some police department. They get the same discussion. These are my standards. These are my expectations. This is the way you're going to conduct yourself as long as you're a member of this department. And then we hold people to those standards to the extent that to the best that we can, particularly when we know that they've fallen short of them. The second thing that takes place is whether they're certified or not, they go through a field training program. So they spend about 12 weeks with a seasoned Charlottesville police officer who is a field training officer, and they get an opportunity to see that officer conduct him or herself in our community in a manner that's consistent with our standards.
How long is the field training?
Field training is about 12 weeks.
And you're with someone else who's already on the Charlottesville staff?
That's correct.
Well, let me ask you, you mentioned your standards. Do you have, a top three, a top five?
Yeah, first and foremost, that you're honest. That you're honest with me, and you're honest with the community, and you're honest in your professional capacity as a police officer. When police officers are dishonest, they're a disability to the department. They can't be used as fact witnesses. They don't have the necessary component of public trust that's really critical for us to be effective in any community. The second thing is that they be respectful. Not only that they respect the community, but that they're respectful to their fellow law enforcement officers. And I tell people every day in the department, my expectation is that you treat each other with respect. If I don't make you do it here, it's going to be difficult to be able to ensure that you do it on the street. But it's an absolute expectation. And when you fall short of that, there are consequences. Now, we're all human beings. We come to work with our own baggage, if you will. Everyone has bad days, and from time to time, you behave in a manner that's inconsistent with those standards. When that comes to the attention of the department, there's a process in place to investigate it and to hold the officer accountable if, in fact, the allegation is sustained. So honesty and respect are really, really critical components, and to be fair and to be objective in how you enforce the law. So those are really the top three, and our profession is held to a high ethical standard. But again, we hire human beings, and sometimes they fall short of that. But the important thing is that when they do, that there are consequences, and that those consequences take into interest not only the standards of the department, but the values of the community as well.
All right, so we're talking about the new style of recruitment. I'm curious as to the article that I read in the Progress that we talked about mentioned, I guess, the Charlottesville pay versus the cities to the east of us versus the cities to the west of us. So that the current, I don't know if focus is the right word, is to find some officers from the Waynesboro area, the Stanton area, the Valley, who are making, I believe that the article in the Progress mentioned or had a brief a couple sentences with the Waynesboro police chief, and the difference in pay was $7,000 or $8,000, and I assume that doesn't include the $5,000 incentive. That's significant. Is there ever any sort of twist in your heart that says, gosh, I know we need people, but it makes me pained to have to go to someone else and take a good employee from them and sort of put them in a similar situation just to relieve mine?
Yeah, sure it does. But the reality of it is we're all in this situation. Doug and I are not only professional colleagues, but we're the Waynesboro chief, that is, but we're personal friends, and we're also members of the Virginia Chiefs of Police Association. And so we've talked as an organization about the importance of being able to develop salary studies and salary surveys to share with each other across the state, and also to use that information when we go before our city council and our board of supervisors, so that they're fully educated and aware of the pay disparities that are taking place around the state with respect to law enforcement. So we try to help each other in that respect. But the reality of it too is, most police chiefs really want their people to succeed and to be successful and to be able to take care of their family. And I don't hold people back when that's their motivation to leave our department. And I know Chief Davis doesn't hold people back either when they can either financially improve their situation for their family or professionally improve their situation for their family. So in one respect, it does concern me. But in another respect, I think we respect each other's professional motives and judgment, and when we can help each other in ways such as we did a pay study here in Charlottesville several years ago that's still being requested by my colleagues across the state because it captured important information that they don't have. So when they can go to their council or board of supervisors and say, there's probably a variety of reasons why people leave us, here's one of them, and look what's happening across the state. It's good to know that we were able to put information together that can be helpful to them and to our entire professional organization.
I was surprised to read the number, the salary number, and we don't need to get into what everybody makes, but for a profession that I have absolutely zero interest in even like pretending to do for a day, you couldn't ever make me think that I would want to be a police officer, just because it doesn't interest me and I'm scared to death of it. The pay level was ridiculously low. I looked at that and went, how do you match that job with the work that goes into that, the responsibility that goes into that, the pressure that goes into that, and pay them that? I don't know. And I'm not asking you to reply to that. I'm just tossing that out there for people who are listening because I just don't get it. But there's a national issue with not having enough officers.
That's right.
And is that it? Is it not enough pay? Is it too much pressure? Are there too many other professions now that people can go into? Because firemen is big. After 9/11, firemen are cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, I think there are a variety of reasons. I think the fact that we're at war, and we have a large number of young people, tens of thousands, that are engaged in military service. The same spirit of service that goes with the service to your country and would draw you to military service is the same spirit of service that would draw you to public safety. So we have a pool of applicants that aren't accessible to us right now because they're fulfilling a military obligation. So I think that's part of our problem. Secondly, you know, police work's very interesting. It's one of the few professions where when you do something, and it doesn't necessarily have to be something wrong, but you do something, there could be a variety of consequences, and some of those consequences are the potential of criminal liability for an action. Example is the use of deadly force. A police officer makes a decision that's life-changing. There's a period of time when he or she is facing possible criminal liability. His or her actions are being reviewed by the Commonwealth to determine whether they violated the criminal laws of this state. And those are pretty significant consequences. An officer's got to live with that and balance that in their decision making. The second thing is they have departmental sanctions that they face, in addition to any criminal review for criminal liability. And those administrative sanctions, regardless of what happens in the criminal courts, could lead to termination of your employment and loss of benefits and a variety of other things. The third sanction that they're continually subjective to is possible civil liability. Not only in our state, but in our federal courts. And if you talk to police officers today, many of them will tell you that we're not so much concerned about being killed as much as we're concerned about being the subject of civil litigation, because it doesn't go away very easily. It can stay with you for years and years and years. It's a tremendous distraction for the department. It's a tremendous distraction for each one of those officers. All of us agree that because of what we do and the awesome authority and control we have over people's destinies, there has to be accountability, there has to be transparency, there has to be avenues of redress, particularly when we act inappropriately. But if you look at the magnitude of federal lawsuits involving police officers, there are hundreds of them a week to come out of the federal circuits. And why would you want to do that for a living? Why would you want to subject yourself to that kind of exposure?
I have no clue.
We can agree that, you know, when you got that much control over people's destiny, it's probably the case. But nonetheless, it's still a distraction, and it's still a huge impediment for getting people to come and to take on this level of responsibility, and particularly for the pay that, as you've mentioned, that they receive. Now, the reality of it is, you stay long enough to be the chief of police, you can make some money. It's not the money someone with these skills could get in the private sector, but nonetheless, it's a pretty competitive salary. But for the rank and file police officer who's out there doing the job every day, putting themselves in harm's way very consciously, it's not a lot of money and a huge amount of risk. And when you balance that out of all the other things they could do with their life, unless they have a real sense of duty and honor, they're probably going to choose something else.
Well, sometimes, I'm very happy to see the flashing lights, and so far in my life, I've been pretty lucky to avoid the flashing lights when I don't want to see them. But God bless you for wanting to do what you do. All right, it should be 44 after the hour here as we talk with Police Chief Timothy Longo from here in Charlottesville. I do want to take a moment and thank Karen McGee, right?
Yes,
Karen. She helped put this all together.
She did. She would appreciate that gratitude as well. She does a tremendous job for me. She's my administrative assistant.
I want to thank her for helping get you in the studio today.
Yeah.
All right.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, this week, some of your favorite columns. Dr. Hook, always with his medical insight. The Dish catches us up on area's latest restaurant news. And The Hook, they're always there with where to go, what to do, and who can see you all around Charlottesville. The Hook, black and white and red all over. And let's thank 4-5-Fix for their support today. If you have a project but not the time, there's a simple way to find a contractor. From kitchen and bathroom remodeling, house painting to decks and siding, it's 4-5-Fix.com. Immediate, no obligation estimates available anytime. The number 4, the number 5, and the word fix.com. All right, back in action here on July 22nd. Charlottesville Police Chief Timothy Longo in the studio with us. Phone lines are not open. Chief and I are in here having a cup of coffee earlier in the week. if only that were true. WNRN doesn't have anything. I think they've got like a cold soda machine outside.
In the hallway.
In the hallway, right. I always tell guests, bring your own coffee or your own water. Or actually, we have a cold water thing, but just no cups. So you got to bring your own, cup. All right, Chief. A couple other questions here. Large speeding fines. It's been more of a state issue, and the fact that now, I guess, as of July 1st, if you're speeding at a certain rate through work areas or et cetera, because there's all sorts of ways that the fine can be assigned to you. But Charlottesville also, I believe on September 1st, has a similar outlay on three roads in town. Is that correct?
Similar but different.
Different in what way?
We've chosen three roads where speeding has been particularly problematic. And one of the ways to certainly change driving behavior is through aggressive enforcement and through severe consequences. And so the fines for speeding on those roads that have been most problematic for us will be $200, of which I think the general district court judge still retains a certain amount of discretion over the imposition of that fine.
And what would the fine have been before?
You probably could get an accurate answer out of a patrol officer,
right,
that does
that.
They don't give me that citation book. It's been a long time since I wrote
all right, so
uniform.
The fine is $200 on three roads, three particular problematic roads starting September 1st.
Right. The difference between that and what the state has done in the civil administrative sanctions is that the judge has no discretion over them. And it is a laundry list of various infractions of the driving rules. And those fines are very steep. Now, of course, it's my understanding that those fines will be funding the state transportation bill and the various work associated with that. And I guess some of the concerns that I hear from folks in the community and even in my own organization is the inability of some recipients of those fines to be able to pay them. And when they don't pay them, what will the consequences be? And will we have more people out there driving around with suspended licenses or no licenses because of their inability to be able to satisfy an administrative sanction for which there will be consequences if you can't pay it? And will it have an impact on our regional jail system as well? So there are some issues that I think we really need to look for over the next several months with respect to those fines. But I see them as different than what we're trying to do here in Charlottesville, because again, with even though there's the increased fines on those streets, I think the judge still has a level of discretion, particularly if an individual is not financially able to satisfy that fine.
Now, one of the major concerns for the typical Virginia citizen, for the state rule, is that only Virginians are punished by this fine.
That's correct. That's my understanding
as
well.
Does that work in Charlottesville as well? Only Charlottesville and Albemarle County folks?
For the $200?
For the three roads in Charlottesville?
No. That applies to anyone who is
the New Yorker, the student from out of state?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, different with the administrative fines imposed by the state. The sanctions, they're applicable only to Virginia residents, which I think has raised some equal protection issues or discussions, as I understand it. I'm not involved in those discussions, but I know that they're out there, they're alive and well. But that's not the case with our $200 increase or our $200 fines on these three roads. They're applicable to whoever violates those provisions.
Now, some folks have said, what good does it do to increase the fine if there's nobody there to enforce the rule? And that's why those roads are problems, is because there aren't enough officers patrolling that area, setting up to give tickets away. And something that I read, which I want to attribute to you, I believe it was, I'm not going to make it a direct quote, but paraphrase something that I believe was attributed to you, was that you don't need more speed enforcement officers. You need the patrol officers. And I'm curious, in two parts there, what's the difference? Mm-hmm. And why would you say that?
Yeah, that was a paraphrase. It was in response to one of the counselor's questions with respect to, you know, we'd like to give you some resources to increase speed enforcement. So, well, let's say we add three additional traffic enforcement officers to your traffic enforcement unit. Now, your traffic enforcement unit's primary responsibility is just that, traffic enforcement, speed enforcement, the investigation of accidents,
the enforcement of traffic laws. They can't give me a ticket if they see me smoking pot on the mall?
Well, they could, but that's not their primary responsibility. Okay. When they hit the streets every day, their primary responsibility is to do traffic enforcement. Right now, there's just three of them.
Okay.
Three of them and a sergeant.
By the way, I'm not smoking pot on the mall.
Oh, I understand that. No,
that was paraphrased.
I understand. So they're out there every day. That's their primary job. Someone says, okay, we'll give you three more of them. Well, that's fine, but keep something in mind. I got eight vacancies. Those eight vacancies are patrol vacancies, and they have to be filled first. You can give me three more people. You can give me 10 more people. But the reality of it is I got to fill my present vacancies before I ever get to them. And those present vacancies are in our patrol force. Now, our patrol force, yeah, they're responsible for the enforcement of traffic laws, but they also handle in excess of last year 56,000 calls for service. They testify in three different courts. They're responsible for neighborhood foot patrol. They're responsible for a variety of different functions, the issuance of arrest warrants, the execution of search warrants, the preliminary investigation of criminal offenses that occur. They're really responsible for a lot of things. And, oh, by the way, when they have discretionary time, that means when they're not handling a call for service, they can do traffic enforcement. But the reality of it is that's not their primary job, not when you look at all the other things that they're supposed to be doing. So to make sure that neighborhoods are sufficiently covered, that police officers can get a day off from time to time, we need to make sure that those patrol vacancies are staffed. So that's what I meant in my response.
All right. 54 after the hour, here with Charlottesville Police Chief Timothy Longo. Let me take a moment and thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support today. They feature outdoor footwear, including sandals from Teva, Reef, and Keen. Also at Blue Ridge, it's performance shorts and tops from Patagonia and the North Face, making your summer outdoor adventure safe, fun, and enjoyable. It's Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in the Berwickshard Shopping Center here in Charlottesville, the Mountain Inn at Wintergreen in Richmond, and at BRMS.com. And stay tuned, because in just a few minutes is Les Temps Perdue. If French is it your thing, that means the time's gone by. And on WNRN, that means late 80s through mid-90s alternative. Tune in for it at noon. Les Temps Perdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music, only here on WNRN. Again, sorry, boys and girls, that you're not getting to make your phone calls, because I can feel the vibe of all the people who want to call in and ask the chief some questions. Chief, are you happy or sad that it's not an actual live phone-in session?
Oh, I certainly don't mind live phone sessions. I think the last time I was with you, I got accused of being responsible for some national crisis of some sort. I can't remember the war or something. I can't remember what it was, but I don't mind that interaction. But this is nice, just you and me in this little room here.
Yeah, it is
having a chit chat.
It's very crowded in here, isn't it? I hope you tone down your aura before coming in here, because the community radio station is really showing off the community aspect of it today. I do want to also take a moment and remind you that you are listening to 91.9 WNRN Charlottesville and WNRN Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. Just a few moments left here, Chief, and then we can wander off to the big party.
There you go.
Later on. I'm curious in what ways city and county officers work together. Here we are talking, and just a few days ago, we had that, wow, major blowout storm. And, trees down, power outages, flooding in areas. And I'm assuming that the city had all they could do to handle just the city area. But with the county being so, so large, and not even limiting the question to just Monday, but, you know, do you cross the lines, across the county city lines, at times other than when there's some sort of immediate ongoing police chase, et cetera?
Yeah, sure we do. We have just a point of reference. We have a regional communication center, which means both our 911 calls and our dispatches come out of the same location. So we have access to the same records management system, so we can look at each other's activity and reports. By all the agencies, I mean the university, the county police, the city police, all have mutual aid agreements, and from time to time can ask for each other's assistance to resolve an issue if one needs to be resolved. If there's a situation where we need additional traffic support, we can call them in. If there's a situation where we have a major crime scene and we need additional support, we can call them in. Several years ago, when we had that horrific situation at the Coal Tower where young people lost their lives and we had a tactical situation that lasted more than 24 hours, we relied on the county and the university police to help us handle calls, because all our resources were deployed at a pretty large crime scene and a perimeter that needed to be contained. There was an issue that happened out on Hydraulic Road just 2 or 3 weeks ago involving a traffic accident in which city resources came out, I believe, and assisted the county in taking part in that investigation. So we do it all the time, and the mutual aid agreement and the close working relationship between the agencies allow us the opportunity to do it. People don't always see it, but it happens sometimes even behind the scenes.
All right, we got 2 minutes left. So I'm going to ask you the biggest question of the hour.
Okay.
You get to jam it into 2 minutes.
All right.
Future plans. I mean, you know, we talked about your view on the job before moving here. Now that you've been here for 7 years, what's upcoming? Your focus on future, where other than filling the positions that are open.
Yeah. You know, it depends on what day you ask me. Personally, I do a lot of teaching, a lot of consulting. I'm keeping my professional avenues open to continue to contribute to my profession in other parts of the country. I would like to continue my work here in Charlottesville and really help us complete some of the projects we've started in technology and really building the kind of police department that I think we all want to have here, and that is one that has the capacity to help this community deal with the issues that it's confronted with today and will be confronted with in the weeks and months and years to come.
Police Chief Timothy Longo from Charlottesville. Chief, thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick.
I appreciate it. It was a nice conversation. I hope it's not like 5 years or so before you come back.
Might be back anytime.
I hope it's not because of some crazy event. I hope it's just in here chatting about what's happening out there in the town. All right, boys and girls, see you next week.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasolines, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or at wnrn.rlc.net. The wake-up call is produced by Catherine Greiner. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the wake-up call, only on WNRN.